good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. It is 9 o'clock on your Thursday morning. Coming up in a half hour today, Per Fogering hosts Fight the Empire with guest host Kurt Liebesit. They'll speak with Nicole Faust, co-author of The Automatic Earth, chronicling and interpreting an ongoing credit crunch as the most pressing aspect of our current financial state. At 10 o'clock today, hear Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, host Dennis Bernstein speaks with author, journalist, and blogger Max Blumenthal about his latest book, Goliath, Life and Loathing in Greater Israel. At 11 today on Between the Covers, host David Naiman interviews novelist Jonathan Lethem about his new novel, Dissident Gardens, in which considers what happened to the real American Communist Party after its Depression-era heyday. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, the topic is My Life in the Negro Leagues, the autobiography of Wilmer Fields. That is all coming up this morning on The Mighty Boo. Stick around. Teresa Mitchell is up next with Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know.
In response to requests from listeners, KBOO will make a program change at 4 p.m. each weekday. Starting on Monday, October 7th, we will air The Tom Hartman Show from 4 to 5 p.m. on a trial basis for 3 months. We are interested in your responses to this change. Please call 503-231-8032 to express your opinion or email program@kboo.org. You can continue to hear Democracy Now! On KBOO each morning at 7 a.m.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
Slip a bookmark into your paperback and listen to KBOO for interviews with your favorite fiction and nonfiction writers. Between the Covers airs Thursdays from 11 to 11:30 a.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program on your free people-supported radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for the news you're not supposed to know. Coastal water temperatures in the Gulf of Mexico are registering higher than average right now, which might explain why the hurricane season has been so weird this year. Or maybe it doesn't explain it, I don't know. But a large tropical storm, soon to become a hurricane, I believe, has appeared almost overnight between Yucatan and western Cuba, and it's now heading north towards the U.S. Gulf Coast. Looking on the satellite, it's remarkable to see how quickly it blows up. Here's the latest from NOAA's National Hurricane Center, which is not shut down. Now, pardon me while I shuffle papers, because I have an update to my update. A hurricane watch is in effect for Grand Isle, Louisiana to Indian Pass, Florida. A tropical storm watch is in effect for west of Grand Isle to east of Morgan City, Louisiana, metropolitan New Orleans, Lake Maurepas, and Lake Pontchartrain. A hurricane watch, they write, means that hurricane conditions are possible within the watch area. A watch is typically issued 48 hours before the anticipated first occurrence of tropical storm force winds, conditions that make outside preparations difficult or dangerous. A tropical storm watch means that tropical storm conditions are possible within the watch area, generally within 48 hours. So they write that the center of Tropical Storm Karen was located, well, they give the latitude and longitude, but for most of us, it's between the Yucatan and Cuba. Western Cuba. They write data from an Air Force Reserve Hurricane Hunter aircraft indicates that maximum sustained winds have increased to near 65 miles per hour, 100 kilometers an hour, with higher gusts. Some additional strengthening is possible in the next day or so, and Karen is expected to be at or near hurricane strength on Friday. Tropical storm force winds extend outward up to 105 miles. From the center. It looks pretty big on the satellite, so go ahead and pull up the National Hurricane Center. You can use a search engine to find that. And speaking of global warming, this from Huffington Post. Forced ashore by the disappearance of Arctic sea ice over their feeding areas, an estimated 10,000 Pacific walrus have been pictured bunched along a beach. And there's a picture accompanying that, and it's a heck of a lot of walrus. Scientists with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration photographed the poor critters packed onto a beach and warned the lack of ice could leave the animals at great risk. Walrus historically use sea ice to rest as they dive for food on the ocean bottom, but sea ice in recent years has receded far beyond the shallow outer continental shelf. And departing from that article, my own comment, the ice... You may have heard some rather confusing information that ice in the Arctic has increased 65%. That's a pretty clever deception because it is 65% higher than its lowest extent ever, which isn't much. And the 65% is surface area only. It's very thin ice. It's, you know, not good enough for the walrus. And the volume of ice is still at a catastrophic low in the Arctic ice cap. So when you hear that things are just hunky-dory with climate change and that the world's getting colder, that's just a lot of crap coming from corporate-based conservatives. The gathering of walrus, returning to the article here, on shore is a phenomenon that has accompanied the loss of summer sea ice as the climate has warmed. Now, the creatures are crammed onto a tiny stretch of Alaskan beach 700 miles northwest of Anchorage because scientists say global warming is melting away their usual habitats. As the walruses are so tightly packed together, scientists have warned young animals are especially vulnerable to stampedes triggered by a polar bear, a human hunter, or a low-flying airplane. And there's more to that article at Huffington Post UK. And why is it on Huffington Post UK? That's an interesting question, don't you think? Now, turning to other weather-related issues, you may have heard on Democracy Now! Amy Goodman earlier this week saying that there are serious issues in the state of Colorado in addition to normal flooding issues. She said we have the Rocky Flats plant, or what was once upon a time the Rocky Flats plant, where plutonium is underground, and there has been extensive flooding in that area. And we also have tens of thousands of active oil and gas wells in the state, 20,000 alone in Weld County in Colorado there. The industry, a lobbying group, is reporting 1,900 of those oil and gas wells have been shut down, including the two largest suppliers, Noble Energy and Anadarko, are reporting about 5 to 10% of their wells have been shut down. This is earlier, excuse me, in September, during the flooding in Colorado. So this raises the question of how much fracking fluid, what's in it, excuse me, and how much plutonium is being leached out from Rocky Flats. And if you turn to the Coloradan.com, Colorado N, you can find Dateline Washington. Two House Democrats are urging Congress to examine oil and gas leaks caused by recent Colorado floods. In a letter sent Friday to the House National Resources Committee Chairman Doc Hastings, Republican of Washington, Colorado's Jared Polis and Oregon's Peter DeFazio, yay, asked for a hearing to examine the impact of natural disasters on oil and gas operations started by hydraulic fracturing or fracking. DeFazio is the committee's senior Democrat. Though nearly 1,900 oil and gas wells in Colorado were closed to prevent spills and leaks, more than 90 barrels of oil and tens of thousands of gallons of water and condensate were discharged, they wrote, quoting, "We are concerned that these spills and leaks may pose health risks to individuals who are already dealing with damage and destruction to their homes and property," end quote. Well, quoting again, "As Congress continues to consider policies to expand domestic oil and gas production, we would benefit from learning more about how disasters like this can impact local communities, states, and federal regulators," end quote. Colorado Oil and Gas Association officials have said that fracking is a first step in the extraction process, and no Colorado well sites were being actively fracked during the flood. However, according to the state officials, 35,000 gallons of oil had been released from flood-damaged locations across the state through that Tuesday afternoon last week. This from Al Jazeera. Two House Democrats are urging Congress to investigate oil and gas spills caused by massive flooding in Colorado, where the number of oil and gas wells has doubled since 2006. Representatives Jared Polis and Peter DeFazio, in a letter sent Friday to the House Natural Resources Committee, called for a hearing on the spills. DeFazio is a committee senior Democrat, quoting, "Not only have my constituents been dealing with damage to their homes, schools, and roads, they are increasingly concerned about the toxic spills that have occurred from the flooding of nearly 1,900 fracking wells in Colorado." That's a quote from Polis in a press conference. He also said, "Congress must deal with this issue to ensure that natural disasters do not also become public health disasters," end quote. Environmental groups have welcomed the decision to have a congressional hearing. Gary Walkner of Clean Water Action told Al Jazeera, "I think it's significant. It has a good chance of a shining light on the failed policies of the state of Colorado. A hearing which brings all the information forward, unfiltered by potentially biased sources, would be good for the public and public policy," end quote. Eight people were killed and thousands displaced by what some called a once-in-a-millennium storm. Now that the water has receded, oil and gas industry teams have been able to get into the fields to inspect the damage. Now, departing from that article and just my comments, how often in the last several years have you heard the phrase, once in 100 years, once in 500 years, storm? Well, that ain't true anymore. And the reason is global warming. It's manifestly obvious, and it's also scientifically nailed down. And you may have also seen some of the articles that spewed forth in the last couple of weeks about how the Earth is cooling. And I don't even want to address them specifically. They're just junk. They're not true at all, and they're originating from organizations like ALEC, if not from ALEC itself, corporate-owned, propaganda-generating organizations, so-called journalists who are in the pocket of the corporations. The number to call with your comments, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. If you would like to talk about global warming or about fracking or about Rocky Flats and plutonium, I have a lot more information on that. Returning to the article that I was just reading from, Colorado's Department of Public Health and Safety warned residents about untreated sewage, possibly contaminating floodwaters, but did not mention risks posed by oil and gas leaks, saying floodwaters may have moved hazardous chemical containers or solvents or other industrial chemicals from their normal storage places. But photos of leaking fracking fluid, oil spills, natural gas blowouts, and toppled tanks have united local environmentalists to echo the call for tougher regulations. Quoting environmentalist, I believe it's environmentalist Walkner, "We need to talk about banning drilling and fracking in floodplains. We also need to talk about setbacks," referring to the distance requirements between oil and gas drilling and water sources. He said, "We should start the conversation about setbacks at 1 mile. I've seen them as close as 50 feet," end quote. And that would be 50 feet to a river or stream. The floods began on September 11th and devastated much of northeastern Colorado, including Weld County, the most heavily drilled county in the United States, with over 20,000 active oil and gas wells. Drilling and storage sites often operate in close proximity to homes and schools. Despite some local resistance, the town of Greeley in Weld County attempted to prohibit drilling within its city limits. But a 1992 Supreme Court case struck down the ban. And we know what side the Supreme Court is on these days, and through most of its history, frankly. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Fox News in Denver broadcast a report implying that there was little or no radiation leakage from Rocky Flats, with their usual technique of reporting a little bit of news. For example, they reported that there were cracks in the clay seals over the plutonium storage or burial areas, and then they got their own, quote, expert, end quote, from, I think, Bureau of Mines or somewhere, someone who was willing to just sort of wave a Geiger counter over it and say that everything was all right. Typical for Fox News, and also typical of sort of redundancy, saying you can see visually that, you know, apparently they don't have an editor, or else, well, maybe their editor likes redundancies. Anyway, number to call, 503-231-8187, and Pam is on the line.
Good morning, Teresa.
Good
How
morning.
Are you this morning?
Doing well.
You sound wonderful. I just wanted to make a comment that when we went up to, I went up to Vancouver and also up to Klatskanai for a first disastrous rezoning hearing for that one in Klatskanai. When we're talking about fossil fuels and what to do about them, you know.
Rezoning for fracking in Klatskanai County?
Actually, they're rezoning for big industrial development, i.e. probably coal, probably back in oil, who knows, transportation. They have a deep water port there. It's very nice, on the Columbia. But my, what really strikes me when you go to other places is there's a lot of something I used to hear back in the mid-60s, and that's, you outside agitators don't belong here. Well, in the mid-60s, it was, you know, the issues of civil rights and war, of course, but especially civil rights, concerned our entire nation. That war hasn't been won yet.
No, we good common folks here don't want any trouble. Yeah, that is a common
global
phrase.
You know, the global, the catastrophic environmental global changes we are causing are certainly, there are no outside agitators. We're all concerned. And not only that, but people who can't be at hearings.
You mean you two are from planet Earth?
People who aren't born yet, they belong at those hearings. They need a voice. So that was just my comment. Apropos of, maybe of nothing, but it's something I've been thinking about a lot lately. So I thought I'd just lay that out there for you and your.
Thanks for laying it out. Well, and as Jim Hightower and Michael Moore have pointed out, the agitator is the part in the washing machine that gets everything clean. Gets everything clean.
We'll see you later. Bye-bye, Hannah.
Later.
Take care.
From RussiaToday.com on the fracking and radioactivity issue, researchers have found high levels of radioactivity salts and metals in water and sediment located downstream from a treatment facility which processes fracking wastewater from an oil and gas production site in Pennsylvania's Marcellus Shale Formation. A Duke University team analyzed water and sediment samples from the from the Josephine Brine Treatment Facility in Indiana County, Pennsylvania, finding radium levels 200 times greater than samples taken upstream from the plant and far higher than what's allowed under the Clean Water Act. Radium is a radioactive metal that can cause diseases like leukemia and other ill health effects if one is exposed to large amounts over time. I'll just pause to say it can cause ill health effects if you're exposed to small amounts over time because it bioaccumulates. But returning to the article, the treatment facility processes flowback water, highly saline and radioactive wastewater that resurfaces from underground after being injected into rocks in the fracking or hydraulic fracturing process. Fracking, they go on to define it, and they say the study was published Wednesday in the Environmental Science and Technology Journal. It focuses on 2 years of tests on wastewater flowing through Black Lake Creek from oil and gas production sites in western Pennsylvania's Marcellus Shale Formation. For 2 years, the Duke team monitored sediment and river water above and below the treatment plant, as well as discharge coming directly from the plant for various contaminants and levels of radioactivity. In the discharge and downstream water, researchers also found high levels of chloride, sulfate, and bromide, which can interact with chlorine and ozone used to disinfect river water for drinking to create a toxic byproduct. Study co-author Avner Vingosh, a Duke professor of geochemistry, said, quote, the treatment removes a substantial portion of the radioactivity, but it does not remove many of the other salts, including bromide, end quote. Adding that traditional facilities like brine aren't made to remove those contaminants. Though the treatment facility strips some radium from fracking wastewater, high levels of metal still accumulate in sediment. The occurrence of radium is alarming. This is a radioactive constituent that is likely to increase rates of genetic mutation and can be a significant radioactive health hazard for humans. That's a quote from William Schlesinger, a researcher and president of the Cary Institute of Ecosystem Studies, who wasn't involved in this study. Number to call with your comments, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Jeremy's on the line.
Yeah, are you familiar with the phrase or category of a climate catastrophist?
Climate catastrophist?
Okay, but it's sort of a field, it's sort of an orientation toward this subject, which is that the situation is catastrophic.
Yeah, I'd say the situation definitely is catastrophic, so you can define me as a climate catastrophist.
Okay, I'm one too. Do you still drive a big van that gets about 12, 15 miles a gallon?
No.
I'm glad to hear that. And because I find it questionable when people who, like me, are catastrophists are contributing to catastrophe. Anyway, glad you've got a Prius, although you should get a bicycle.
Well, no. I won't. Hang on. Are you still there?
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to take that route. We need political change. We need general change. And I live in a society where I am required absolutely to maintain my mortgage, to go forth and be productive. And that requires a car. And I get the best car that I can for, say, $1,100. And sometimes it doesn't get good gas mileage and I won't apologize for it. I want general change. And I bicycled my butt off for thousands and thousands of miles while I was still young and healthy, and I am now old and unhealthy. And
Older and less healthy.
I bicycle a lot less. And so I think that change, I do think it's important to do these individual efforts. However, I don't think that they are significant. I don't think that they are so far significant in this catastrophe that I'm describing, which is brought about by an industry which just absolutely has power over our lives. And we need to overthrow government. I mean, not government. We need to overthrow corporate rule. And as an anarcho-socialist, I think that we need to create a system that is far more transparent and which responds to us and not to these distant rich, to these billionaires.
And so I actually totally agree with all of that. However, I still think people should be encouraged to look at how they live and what that means. And if you're a catastrophist, as am I, I think that means perhaps going without some of the comforts that we have come to take for granted. And even understanding that you know, a total change in power relationships, a destruction of corporate life as we understand it, is absolutely necessary. In the meantime, I think we can buy a little more time by stopping burning up the planet ourselves.
Sure, but I've got no time for horizontal hostility. And come on, admit it, that's where you're coming from when you're saying, do you get around in a van? Which I haven't had for the better part of a decade, actually.
I've seen you in a van within 5 years, but, you know, maybe it was somebody else.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, then we'll just end this call. And number to call, 503-231-8187. I drive a vehicle that gets 4 miles per gallon all day, 10 hours a day, 5 days a week. It's a city bus. And Scott's on the air. What's happening, Scott?
Oh, nothing. Just, you know, checking in the conversations and all that. And you know, where we hurt nowadays and speeding up at a accelerated rate. But anyways, just wanted to make a comment, you know, that these, you know, especially the Tea Party and, you know, the corporate thing and all comes down to advertising. I just really don't think we're going to get anywhere until, you know, a little commercial spoof. But until these conservatives get out of their forever swim baptismal fonts and do something to help people and especially Earth and Earth's ecosystem.
Well, you know,
okay.
Well, you know, honestly, when I say that need to overthrow corporate rule, I'm aware of just how little power people have these days and how much power the corporations do have. And I try to be realistic about that. I think that partly because of the Republicans and the corporations that they so enthusiastically represent, not that the Democrats don't, we're heading for one hell of a crisis. Let's see, 25 minutes after the hour, I'd better raise this point pretty quickly. Let me just change subjects here. The debt ceiling crisis. Debt ceiling is a propaganda phrase. It's just the full faith and credit of the U.S. government that's being threatened here. And the full faith and credit of the U.S. government is guaranteed by Section 4 of the 14th Amendment. It is constitutionally inviolable. And should the president decide to defy the government shutdown, he can constitutionally do so. Now, what would happen, I don't know. But it's all the whole thing with the government pretending that they just can't go forward between the Repubs and the Dems. It's a scam. I mean, this is the same government that prints, put quotation marks around the word print, that prints trillions of dollars to give away to billionaire banksters without a problem, without an end in sight. And when that was when there was just a little bit of discussion from Bernanke that they might slow down quantitative easing. That's how they phrase it. In other words, slow down printing trillions of dollars for free for rich people. Then there was a tremendous crisis in the stock market and a big backlash, and they gave up and said, oh, no, they're not going to slow down. But the thing is, you can't do this forever because, as I was saying last week, this is resulting in the degradation of the force of the dollar. This has resulted since 2007 in 12% inflation. Oh, yeah, you're paying 12% more, even though there's less demand for goods. That's how much the dollar is being washed out. And if this keeps going on, there will eventually be a crash in the value of the dollar. Quoting Matthew O'Brien, who was writing in The Atlantic, he's saying that if this goes on the way it's been going, we could have a 1929-style stock crash. Let me read a little bit from his article. It's titled, Not Raising the Debt Ceiling, A Crisis If We're Lucky, A Historic Calamity If We're Not. He says that there are a few things that we do know. We do know that what will determine whether this is a self-inflicted wound to the foot or the head, that's whether we outright default on the debt or not. Remember, the debt ceiling doesn't stop us from borrowing more to pay for new spending. It stops us from borrowing more to pay for old spending. It only stops us from borrowing more because we say so. It's not that lenders don't want to lend to us anymore. After inflation, they're still paying us to borrow for 5 years. No, it's that we said we won't borrow anymore just because. It's a self-imposed limit. And if we don't lift that self-imposed limit, we enter a world of economic pain. We couldn't borrow more to pay for the spending Congress has already authorized. We'd have to pay what we owe out of tax receipts and rolled over debt instead. But as the Bipartisan Policy Center points out, tax receipts and rolled over debt would only cover 68% of U.S. bills, so we'd have to cut the rest. This immediate 32% austerity could hit anything from Social Security checks to food stamps into the debt itself. Now, departing from that article, notice that when I say Social Security and food stamps, it hits the little guy. Are the billionaires going to hurt from this? No. The servants will still come bearing the silver platters. Maybe they're golden with lobster and whatever they want on them. On their yachts, their 96-foot yachts with the helipads and the submarines, I'm not even making this up, that they get around in. So this debt limit is a scam inside a scam inside a scam. And it could create one hell of a crisis. And that's what I've been waiting for all my life, one hell of a crisis, when some people might remember some of the things that people like me have said on the air on people's community radio stations, that the only way to get through it is to organize and to stand up for ourselves and to fight for transparency and participation and all those things that corporations can't stand in government. You've been listening to Press Watch. Stay tuned, because Pear Fogering is coming up on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Hi, this is Justin Miller, KBOO's underwriting coordinator. Every day, local businesses support KBOO through program sponsorship or underwriting. These underwriters are people like you, progressive, diverse, and supporting real radio. So when you hear an underwriter's acknowledgement, consider giving them some of your business and telling them that you heard about them on KBOO. If your business would like to reach out to the area's 55,000 most diverse and progressive listeners, you can learn how at kboo.fm/underwriting, by email to underwriting@kboo.org, or call Justin, 503-231-8032. KABU Underwriting. Your clients are listening.
KABU's fall membership drive starts on the 10th, and you could help make reaching our fundraising goal a little easier by offering a matching donation of at least $500 for us to use on air during the drive. Matching money is a really great motivator to entice our non-contributing listeners to donate. So please email membership@kboo.org if you would like to sign up or have any questions. Or just call 503-231-8032 and ask for the membership department to plan your fall drive matching gift today.
Well, good morning. This is KBOO. The show is Fight the Empire. My name is Per Fograng, and hosting with me is Kurt Liebezeit, and our guest is Nicole Foss, who writes under the name of Stoneley for the Automatic Earth, and she's on a world tour, and she is coming to Corvallis and Portland very, very soon. Nicole, are you there?
I am indeed.
Oh, welcome to KBOO. And Kurt, welcome. Why don't you start out?
Good morning. We should say welcome back to KBOO.
That's right.
Because we've interviewed you in the past. It's been a couple of years. And we're very interested in talking to you about, you know, how things have changed in your perception of what's going on in the world. But first, we should probably give a little bit of background on who you are. Would you like to do that, Nicole?
Yes. I'm an international speaker